This is Washington Watch Weekly, your voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. Now, here's our host, the president of the Family Research Council, Tony Perkins.
Hello and welcome to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. Coming up, more analysis over the media mishandling of Arizona's religious freedom bill. Molly Hemingway of The Federalist joins me for that conversation. Also, Senator Jim Inhofe of Oklahoma says the foreign policy blunders of the Obama administration all but guaranteed the crisis in Ukraine. And Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu was in town this week for a meeting with President Obama and a speech at AIPAC, where he raised concerns about Iran, embraced the prospects of peace with the Palestinians, and said the European boycotts of Israel would fail. Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann of Minnesota, a strong supporter of Israel, joined me for that conversation. Let me encourage you to go to the website, tonyperkins.com. You can find out more about this weekend's guest and the topics that we discuss. You can also sign up for my daily update right there on the website, tonyperkins.com. You can also follow me on Twitter, at T. Perkins. Well, now that the hysteria has passed in Arizona and the Super Bowl is there to stay, people are beginning to realize that Senate Bill 1062 is not what the media was reporting. A good point Molly Hemingway made in her piece for The Federalist on the bill earlier this week was, quote, one of the most interesting things about modern media's deep hostility toward the religious, their religions, and religious liberty in general is that the freedom of the press in America is actually rooted in religion. Now all the media does is protect freedom of speech and the press, but leaves religion in the dark. Here's my interview from Monday with Molly. Molly, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks. Nice to be here.
Nice piece. Good work. Let me ask you a question here. How badly has the media misrepresented SB 1062?
Yeah, I've been a reporter for a long time, and I've seen some pretty bad examples of media coverage, and yet I don't think I've ever seen anything quite so bad in terms of the difference between what this bill actually did and how it was portrayed in the mainstream media. And it was everywhere. I mean, it was on TV shows, all of the media outlets, every newspaper, and it was just relentless and pretty much almost completely the opposite of what this bill actually was.
Was it because they didn't read the bill, they just kind of parroted what they heard others saying, or was it willful and that they intentionally did that?
Yeah, I never know what to chalk up with, to idiocy and what to chalk up to an actual attempt to be doing activism, but the bill was 2 pages long, and anybody who would have read it would have known that the word, like, gay doesn't even appear in the bill, so they would have had a hard time pitching it as this bill focused on, solely and exclusively on issues dealing with homosexuality. It would have been impossible to do that if they'd read the bill. But also there's just a herd mentality. There's a desire to be approved of by peers. And then, of course, there's, the media even admit that they're activists for expanding gay rights. And you've seen stuff like that in the New York Times where they're just admitting it now, the Washington Post, NPR. And it's a shame because it's not helpful to civil discourse. And then in the case like this, people just get completely erroneous information about a pretty important issue.
So, Molly Hemingway, does this then hurt the credibility? I mean, not that they had credibility, but does this further hurt the credibility of the mainstream media for how they handled this debate in Arizona?
I think actually it's worse than that. I mean, I think people probably already knew that they couldn't trust a lot of mainstream media on this topic. But what's bad is that the media are so controlling the discourse, the terms of debate. They are so willfully aligned with one side that I think it's almost just dangerous for the Republic itself. So whether or not they've lost credibility matters far less than what they're doing to the country by foreclosing any reasonable discussion of a really important thing for everybody. And religious liberty is just as important for atheists as it is for religious people. And it is a founding principle of our country, and it's the basis on which we get other rights like speech and assembly and the press. And so if you undermine religious liberty, you undermine these other rights, but you also tend to see globally that if you don't have religious liberty, you also don't have economic freedom and you don't have many other political freedoms. So it's just very bad for the country. I think they're so into fighting this cause that they haven't really stopped to think about it. And they're not known for being terribly reflective, but it's a very bad sign for the country, I think.
And I want to touch on that, Molly. You talk about in your piece the background religious freedom is in terms of its history here and how the freedom of the press and freedom of speech emanates from that. And I don't think most people realize that. When you look at the 17 actual amendments that came over from the House originally to the Senate, the freedom of religion and rights of conscience were the first enumerated personal freedom found in that list. The founders saw that as extremely important and that everything else hinged on it, didn't they?
Yeah, and that's what I think is good for people to kind of understand, is that when these things were being worked out prior to our country's founding, and I use the example of the John Peter Zanger trial, which a lot of people learn about when they're in elementary school or used to. And the whole defense that was made there was that he was telling the truth, so he couldn't be accused of libel. And it all got it at the root of what is truth. You know, how is truth revealed to man, or how does man discover truth? And these are fundamentally religious questions about our relationship with the divine. So once you work out that you have to have the freedom to make decisions of a religious nature without coercion from the government, then all of a sudden you start seeing how that extends not just into religious freedom, but freedom of speech, freedom of press, freedom of assembly, and all these other things that we take for granted and that we have taken for granted for so long that now we might be in danger of losing at least a portion of these freedoms.
You know, Molly, as you mentioned, this bill was really less than 2 pages, and I have a bad habit. I like to read bills before, you know, you go out and start commenting on them. I would never make it through the Nancy Pelosi School of Public Policy, where you dispose of them, then you read them. But the reality is this was about religious liberty and the fact that it was amendment to the state's RFRA, the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, that would allow people that when they entered into business, they wouldn't have to leave their religious freedom behind. And so it was really straightforward. So when you look at what Governor Brewer did and the fact that she vetoed this, was she simply folding to the outside pressure?
You know, I can't speak to that, and I don't know enough about her or whatnot, but I would imagine it would be difficult to withstand this unrelenting pressure. There was no room to even reasonably discuss this. Now, I'm not saying that you have to be for this bill, or I think that you could have any number of good reasons for being for or against it, but it needs to be discussed honestly at the very least. And one of the things, you know, bring up that it's a Religious Freedom Restoration Act bill, and I think people don't even understand where that came from. I mean, a broad coalition of religious and secular people came together to pass that at the federal level in 1993 because Native Americans' religious rights were trampled on by the Supreme Court relating to worship services. And that speaks to how broad religious liberty really is. People understood that if you could trample on a Native American's rights to worship as their conscience dictated, well, you could certainly trample on other people's rights. And that is why it's best if everyone works together for religious liberty. And our press right now is actively working against it. They portray it as something that's just designed to hurt Obama, as if religious liberty is something that was invented, you know, within the last 6 years. Or they portray it as anti-gay, ditto. It is ridiculous to take a really important human rights issue like religious liberty and mischaracterize it in the narrow and limited and juvenile way that our media have.
Well, I thought your piece was very thoughtful in pulling out some very important aspects that were not a part of this discussion. And I'm hopeful, Molly, that as we no doubt have another national discussion on this at some point in time, because religious liberty is so fundamental and it is under attack in this country, that people will take some of your advice to heart as we enter in this discussion once again.
Take care.
That was Molly Hemingway with The Federalist. To find out more about Molly and her work, you can go to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links over. Also, while you're there, be sure and sign up for my daily update right there on the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, when we come back, Senator Jim Inhofe of Oklahoma joins us to break down events in Ukraine and what might be next when it comes to Russia and that region of the world. Don't go away. We're coming back with more of the weekend edition of Washington Watch right after this.
Forty-one years ago, the Supreme Court gave a woman the right to abort her unborn baby, at any stage, for any reason. Since then, we've lost 56 million little lives. But FRC and our pro-life allies are fighting this injustice. We've been working with Congress, supporting abortion alternatives, and publishing many educational resources. We mourn the loss of life, but we also offer hope and truth. To learn more, visit frc.org/pro-life.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Thanks so much for being with us. For many members of Congress, the situation between Russia and Ukraine came as no surprise. Oklahoma Senator Jim Inhofe said, quote, President Obama's attempt to seek peace through apologetic diplomacy while defunding and dismantling our military has failed. Today, our enemies don't fear us and our allies no longer respect us. Oklahoma Senator Jim Inhofe joined me on Wednesday for a detailed discussion. Senator, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you, Tony. And by the way, I'm calling you from the cloakroom because we're in the middle of 8 votes right now. So if I get an interruption, you'll understand why.
I certainly understand that and appreciate you taking time out to talk with us, which I think is an issue that's extremely important, but not one that surprises you with what's happening in Ukraine with President Putin. Really kind of thumbing his nose at America and our president.
Well, they are doing it. I think what's happened is this administration, it's John Kerry and President Obama, have just put us in a position where we can't negotiate through strength, but from a position of weakness. We had a hearing this morning, Tony, that you may not know anything about yet. It lasted for 3.5 hours. We had the General Dempsey, as well as Chuck Hagel, the Secretary of Defense. And I was taking the position to them is they have so degraded our military that we're not in a position to be able to do it. Let me just mention to you, because a lot of people are used to me saying this, it's not just me. The top person in the military, Tony, is the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. That's General Dempsey. Mm-hmm. He said we're putting our military on a path where the force is so degraded and so unready that it would be immoral to use force. Now, that's unbelievable. Here's a guy who was appointed by the president and who's telling the truth. Then the vice chief of the is Admiral Winnefeld. He's the second highest person in the military. He said there could be, for the first time in my career, instances where we may be asked to respond to a crisis and we will have to say we cannot. This is a new America, Tony, and it's a real serious thing. And I'm just so happy that you are taking time to help inform the public of this crisis that we're operating in right now.
Well, yesterday, or Monday, the Israeli Prime Minister was here, spoke to AIPAC. He brought up 3 issues in his speech. He talked about Iran and the nuclear problem that they present. He talked about the peace process that is ongoing with the Palestinians, and then he talked about the European-driven boycott against Israel. But he was very clear and forthright in the issue with Iran and their nuclear capabilities, that what Israel saw as the goal is to prevent them from having the capabilities of developing nuclear weapons. Mm-hmm. That does not seem to be the goal of the Obama administration.
Oh, no, it's not. And see, it's worse than that, because I love Netanyahu, and I can remember being in Israel talking to him, and he shakes his head, and why didn't the Americans learn back at 9/11 that they are subjected to a similar threat that we are? In the case of Iran, and I've said this on your program, we have known for certain since 2010 that by 2015, Iran would have the nuclear weapon and a delivery system, not just that would be a threat to Israel, but that would reach the east coast of the United States of America. Now, you might remember the first budget. Tony, I went to Afghanistan to respond to the president's first budget 5 years ago, and I thought if I could respond from there with the tanks going by, I'd get national attention, and it'd be a wake-up call, and it worked. I was well covered there. In that first budget, he did away with our only fifth-generation fighter, that's the F-22, did away with this great lift capacity, the C-17, did away with our future combat system, but the most serious thing, he did away with our ground-based interceptor in Poland. Mm-hmm. Now, we had put that together because all of our ground-based interceptors are on the West Coast. That's where the threat was perceived to be.
Right.
Now we know that Iran is going to have that capability, and it would take one lucky shot from back there. You want to be able to shoot, look, and shoot again to guarantee the effectiveness of a ground-based interceptor. So that's a direct threat to where I'm sitting right now on the East Coast, and it's one that we knew at the time. And so that's just all a part of the crisis that we're facing militarily.
Senator, what's the way forward? How do we rebuild America's military so that we are not literally like Iran is mocking the United States?
Sure they are. Sure
how
they
do
are.
We, well, how do we get beyond that?
I asked a question this morning to General Dempsey and to Secretary Hagel, and they don't have an answer. All they say is, and I can't really blame them, because this all comes from the president's budget. That's where the decisions are made as to where the priorities are. I said, right now, you are accepting a level of risk that we've never had to accept before. Now, for those listening who may not be familiar with these terms, risk means lives. It means what level of risk are you willing to take? Well, they have dropped that level to the point that it has the effect of killing our young Americans in combat. And so the only solution to this, well, for one thing, I think we'll be in a lot better shape, since I'm quite sure that Republicans will take control of the United States Senate in 2014. But we will still have Obama for two more years, and he's the reason. And I have to say this, Tony. A real liberal in his heart doesn't think you need a military anyway. I know people that would never admit that, but people that I served with here in the United States Senate. It's just that's a crisis we're up against. Now, here's the good news. If we do take over the United States Senate, which I'm absolutely convinced we will, that's going to make those vulnerable incumbent Democrats that will be coming up in 2016, they're not going to walk the plank for Obama. And so I think we'll pick up votes there to start rebuilding our military, reestablishing priorities. And this whole, right now, it's the far left environmental agenda that this president has that is causing the problem, is causing the emphasis that we are facing right now in America.
So this election coming up this fall, November 2014, of course, the primary is taking place even right now as we speak. This is a critical election.
This is, because this means whether or not, you know, I've been the ranking member. I'm currently the ranking member on the Armed Services Committee. Well, once you're a majority, you're not a ranking member. You're the chairman.
Right.
And then you control the agenda. And so we would be in much better shape after the next election. But I just want to make sure people are aware of how significant this is. And you're doing a lot to help.
Well, Senator, thanks for joining us. I appreciate you stepping off the floor of the Senate to update us. This is important information. We'll continue to keep our folks informed as to where we stand as a nation from a national security standpoint.
You know, you've got to do it. Well, you're doing the Lord's work. Just keep it up. We're going to win this. We're going to pull out of it.
All right, Senator. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Tony.
That was U.S. Senator Jim Inhofe of the state of Oklahoma. To find out more, go to the website tonyperkins.com and follow the links over. Be sure and sign up for our alerts right there on the website, tonyperkins.com. You can also follow me on Twitter, @TPerkins. All right, when we come back, my good friend, Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann of Minnesota, joins me to talk about Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and his speech here in Washington earlier this week. Don't go away. We're coming back with more Washington Watch right after this.
"41 years of Roe v. Wade has cost us big time. 56 million babies have died. Their mothers and fathers have suffered. But did you know that legalized abortion also has quantifiable effects? In fact, it's caused our country a loss of between $70 and $135 billion of economic activity every year. You can't put a price tag on life, but abortion costs us. To find out more, visit mary.us/abortion effect.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Thanks so much for being with us. Let me encourage you again to go to the website, tonyperkins.com, find out more about today's guest. Well, when Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu visited the White House this past Monday, it must have made for a pretty awkward conversation as the president continues to try to force a peace agreement with the Palestinians on Israel. Now, bear in mind, the Palestinians refuse to recognize the right of Israel even to exist. Well, instead of reaffirming our support for America's greatest ally, we've tried to back them into a corner. Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, who represents Minnesota's 6th Congressional District, joined me on Monday to break down the situation. Michelle, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony, thank you so much, and thank you for offering this important topic to your listeners today.
Let's talk about this. John Kerry, Secretary of State, has been shuttling back and forth to between here and Israel, talking between the Palestinians and the Israelis. Has he, his efforts, have they failed? And so now it's the president's time to start shoving on Israel to comply with this peace process?
Well, John Kerry essentially has been trying to put Israel in a box and telling Israel that if they fail to give up land to the Palestinians and agree to a two-state solution and revert to their 1967 borders, which Israel would be incapable of being able to defend, the threat then comes that the United States, as Barack Obama said in an interview last Thursday to Jeffrey Goldberg, the president said to Israel, time is running out. What he meant by that is either you agree to this U.S. creation of a framework whereby you withdraw and you give up your lands in Judea, Samaria, the biblical homeland of the Jewish people. Unless you do that, two things will happen. One, you will find yourselves in the crosshairs of an economic boycott and you'll be isolated by the world. And number two, the United States, in all likelihood, would find herself unwilling to defend Israel, both in the UN and in UN-related organizations. Now, that's the sum total of what the United States has offered by way of a protective umbrella to Israel since 1948. So what the president is saying is shocking. But clearly, this didn't just happen. The reason why we're seeing the world in turmoil right now is because of the president's actions on foreign policy for the last 5 years of his presidency. The world has taken the measure of the man, and they realize the weakness that is in him and his worldview, and it's a green light, especially for the Islamic fundamentalists, and they're going with a green light.
Yeah, I don't think, Congresswoman Bachmann, that many people realize what's at stake here. But going back to the article that you made reference to with Goldberg, the president made this comment. He said, quote, if Palestinians come to believe that the possibility of a contiguous sovereign Palestinian state is no longer within reach, then our ability to manage the international fallout is going to be limited. What does a contiguous Palestinian state look like in terms of its impact upon Israel's ability to protect themselves?
Well, I think you've asked the right question, Tony, because what it looks like is that all of Judea and Samaria would become a separate sovereign state with Palestine, and also part of the other demand from Palestine is that Gaza would also be included in that state. And they're also demanding that an east-west road, kind of a belt, would cut Israel in half to join Gaza with the West Bank. And this is what they would call their country. But that isn't enough. They also want to divide Jerusalem and have eastern Jerusalem become the new capital of Palestine. The practical effect, which the entire world seems to know and understand, everyone except the president, is that if Israel agreed to that, there would be no ability for Israel to defend herself. She would be attacked. She would be in a weakened position at her widest. At one point, she would be maybe 9 miles wide. I mean, think of that. and she would have Iran working through the terrorist organization Hezbollah on the north firing at her. She would have Al-Qaeda elements in the Golan Heights from Syria firing on her, right just east of the Sea of Galilee. And then also the potential for battle from Jordan, which at this point is highly unlikely. And thank God the Muslim Brotherhood is no longer running Egypt, or else she would have attacks from the Muslim Brotherhood through Al-Qaeda. So when Israel is at her weakest, when President Obama has allowed Israel to realize her worst nightmare, which is the continuing possibility of Iran with a nuclear weapon, at the worst possible time, President Obama is not only seemingly withdrawing U.S. support for Israel, he's threatening Israel.
I think you're absolutely right. I mean, we do understand how history will eventually play itself out, and Israel, over, you know, its history is an amazing story, how they, you know, are still a nation against
That's
all
right.
odds. But I tell you what, I think we're on the wrong side right now, because we're not standing with Israel.
We are definitely, Tony, on the wrong side, and it is jaw-dropping, it is stunning, it's breathtaking. And here the President of the United States was helped enormously by the Jewish community. He made all sorts of promises in 2008 to the Jewish community through AIPAC. He did it again in 2012 when he was about to be elected. He made promises that he would have Israel's back. And in return, the Jewish community gave him their votes, their support, their financial support. And as recently as last week, 48 Jewish donors who were big contributors to the president wrote a letter just this last week to the Democrat senators in the U.S. Senate to tell them to not advance sanctions against Iran.
Michelle, we're up against the end of the show. Thanks for being with us, Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann.
God bless you and your audience. Bye-bye.
Again, that was Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann of Minnesota. To find out more about what Michelle is working on, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com, and follow the links over. While you're there, be sure and sign up for my daily update. Keeps you up to date Monday through Friday on issues that pertain to faith, family, and freedom. Free. Comes right into your inbox. All you got to do is sign up at TonyPerkins.com. Well, folks, we're all out of time for this weekend edition of Washington Watch, but I want to thank you for joining us again. And I want to encourage you to be back again next weekend. But until then, remember the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul. He tells us that when we've prayed, when we've prepared, when we've done everything we can do, we're to continue standing.
Washington Watch Weekly is a donor-supported ministry of the Family Research Council.